the centers of around the world, number of which are shown here, SIP, ICRISAT, ERIE, some of those very much involved with our membership. Again, the structure and organization of them. If you're into abbreviations, FDR, thank you. You can see those are listed there, and there are others. I don't mean to be all inclusive of this. Now, turning to my second objective is looking at some funding opportunities. And then again, this is open-ended. We first kind of think about USAID. And I'm not sure how many are familiar with USAID, but as it says in here, it came out of the Marshall Plan, people-to-people exchange. Now we have Partners to America, Partners in Exchange, so there is some linkages there and some history to draw on. And it continues to develop. It only uses, as it says in the second paragraph, spending less than one-half of 1%, that's really only half a percent, but this is the way they say it, of the federal budget. USAID works around the world to achieve goals of economic growth, agriculture and trade, very important, global health, even more important, democracy, even greater importance, conflict prevention and humanitarian assistance. Now, where does entomology fit into that global picture? There is an awful lot of funds that are used, whether it's for training activities, whether it's for reconstruction, whether it's for other activities. We look at a big cash cow, in quotation marks. The World Bank sounds like they should have, as they indicate here, finances, where's my mouse? Finances for all. But they focus in certain areas. And as I said up on the right-hand side, it catalyzes the future as inclusive and sustainable globalization. We have to think globally and act globally. Another one is shown here. This is more in the university realms, and you all have access to this. It's the Community of Science. That is a very small organization, but it is provides with sources of funding, usually linked only to the United States, sometimes North America, but why not other areas? That's my question. Why not? And the same thing with ESA, if I forget to put that in later. Why not is ESA more in international support? And they're increasing. Other funding opportunities, and you can add to this list, WinRock, Partners of America, Rockefeller, Fundagro, we can even look at WHO, IPM CRISP, University International Affairs, I've been involved in the University, Department of Entomology, International Affairs Committee, non-government organizations, private foundations, and never forget, organizations, church, missions, civic groups, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot going on in those arenas as well. I'd like to just capture some of these. Each individual here could do likewise, but I want you to just look at the connections that's made. This is some pest introductions with APHIS. I put together posters like this, so looking at the pest, the origin, the date, distribution, detection, and monitoring on fruit, vegetables, my area, and containment and management. And we know where they came from. The last century, Europe. Some from Asia, some from Africa, South America. Where will they be coming in this century? Where our trade is, Asia primarily. But we'll get other pests. Just showing that this is not only entomological and we need to be have a pretty wide network. Tropical spiderwort, a pest that I was involved with as a plant pest inspector in North Carolina Department of Agriculture. Looking at this introduced pest and what implications it has. Of course, it'd be nice to get an insect to eliminate it. This is the day flower. Where does this come from? Comes from Asia and also in that part of the world we have movement of trade. Where did it show up in North Carolina, specifically the United States? In North Carolina we had two places with our breeding program. You have to watch these breeders. They'll bring in things in exchange, and they exchange some pests sometimes. They exchange this weed, 1,600 weed seeds per one little pod. It also was secondarily at the Cherry Research Farm for Sustainable Environmental Farming Systems, where it still continues because we cannot interrupt research going on, and so we have an excellent training site for looking at this dayflower. I was able to look at on-farm tests all over the state. We GPS those. We looked at research stations. We looked at larger growers that might be moving equipment around as pathways of entry. It's a negative impact in my responsibilities, I did not find any. But that's the bad news. The good news is that it's not present, so we do not have a quarantine, which is very, very cumbersome to have even in a state or even in a portion of a state. But we have to check on that. Another one that I was involved in very, very briefly was the Carolina Beach Vets by Vitex. This is a task force that exists in South Carolina, North Carolina, another introduced pest from the UNC Arboretum. And so you can see how some of these things get in. And so internationally, we need to be ahead of the curve, maybe over in that part of the world where some of these are coming from. This, again, was of Korean origin. Melon fly damage takes a group of interactions and connections here with Partners of America, here with WinRock, here with Ministry of Agriculture in country, IPM CRISP, number of training programs have to take place. And you actually train the trainers. And that's very important. They're using some technology. Sweet potato weevil, another one I've been involved with the pheromone, which is all over the world, doing DNA fingerprinting. And that is the same species. How do we know? Again, we have connections, as is shown here. We have Dr. O'Brien on the right. He's a taxonomist, an emeritus. And let's not overlook emeriti as an active participant here, because you all are going to become one sooner or later, and it comes fast. And then we have Shirley, and she'll be talking a little bit. But it involves people. There's a couple of happy folks with my CEO there. And you can be smiling, or you can be singing the blues for lack of funding, even though you have the scorpion, you have the spider, and you have the fishy tie. Funds will drive anything. And then, speaking of funds, we have the ESA Foundation. Person on the left is very creative in helping out with the auctions. Hope you participate in that. So you got to have that foundation and funds. The person on the right is having fun. And you must have fun in anything you do in international programs. It's also the deliverer as well as the receiver. And we need vertical and horizontal integration. It is never done alone. And with that, I thank you for the opportunity, the invitation, the attention. And my challenge to each one of you is to get involved in your ESA in international affairs. Thank you.
I'd like to now to talk about the pros and cons of ESA International Branch from non-U.S. citizen perspective. With Nubar Bostonian that you see on your right, and we settled the matter in restaurants, you know, like a bit like Europeans, if you want. So I'm going to do a few candid remarks here. I think it's about what we think, how we can go international. But first of all, let's start with the beginning. From our perspective, ESA has always been open and unofficially international. We start from there. For example, AWA Brown and Freeman McEwen have been president, and they are Canadians of this society. Now, our hypothesis is that to be sustainable, a society must provide a win-win proposition for its membership, no matter where it comes from. Nubar and I tallied the actual program in San Diego, and we found out there were 45 papers, oral presentation, and 688 posters. It makes 2,033 entries, including symposia. Now, from these, 4% are from non-USA, from North America, from non-USA. This is the first author, by the way. There are co-authors, but we were not in that. So we used the first author. 1.3% from South America, 1.2% from Europe, so it's international. And again, it's really in line with what Steve presented. Canada is well represented at this event here. Asia 2.5, Africa 0.05, and South Pacific 0.06. So it is international. And the idea here is how can we as ESA here, do better, really. But we start from there. Why is that so? Well, we think that in terms of agriculture, for instance, Canada and Mexico share a fauna with the States, so it's a natural forum to come here in the States and to share information about agricultural insects that are part of our program. Lower transportation expenses. I'm sympathetic with the Indian fellow who just talked that it's costly to come here. I would say, however, it will be costly to go to IC meetings. So money is an object, yes, but it's true for several societies. But what we feel is that when we attend the meeting here, most presentations are very good quality. We come here for the quality. If the quality goes down, we would not be here. And we will not be here if the quality goes down. And this is true for the publications. In the recent years, the ESA Journal, the quality went up. I was talking with John Trumbull yesterday evening. John makes a lot of efforts to have an outreach in terms of reviewers, in terms, and when I mean outreach, is he asked Europeans, Canadians, international reviewers, as well as editors. An example here is Phyllis Weintraub sitting there in the middle of the room. Phyllis lives in Israel.